Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, we rejoin the Frontispiece 4 and friends mid-mission as they try to get over 3 to the station basements for, hopefully, a friendly conversation. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hey, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Cato, a.k.a. Hecate, a.k.a. who is that large and imposing shape moving not at all suspiciously around L5?
Hi, I'm Robin, and yep, I'll be playing Cal Armitage, but that's officer to you, unless your name is Nick, and you're currently in a Zencaster call with me. Hi, Nick.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I'll be playing Luke Byrne, or Matchstick, who sure is somewhere.
And hello, I'm Nick, and I'll be playing a drone operator named Ing. Or will Ing be playing us all? Nope, I got it right the first time.
I was hoping that would be the answer. Well, thanks, players. Let's get right into it. let's get right into it with our recap of last time, courtesy this time of Cal.
Too many rookies plan operations like they're moving against a static force. Ops follow the third law of motion, too. To every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. The action. We made plans to move our so-called contraband. The reaction. The frontispiece ended up surveilled by one of those damn IMX drones. The dragnet noose tightens around our necks. The drone proceeded with the pretty standard stuff by PSS standards, intimidation tactics to try and circumvent a warrant under the guise of protection. What wasn't standard was the messaging Cato received about the processing of the warrant. That was altered from the usual boilerplate. The kids have Big Brother's attention. I want it on this record that I never liked this plan. I would have melted the damn thing down rather than set it loose in the basement, endangering all of us for the childish dream of being able to commune with a weapon. I should have just destroyed it, but it's too late for the should-haves now. Step one. Use their expectations to hide in plain sight. This wasn't my idea. Really, it was the kids. And if it weren't for some blind spots in their thinking, I'd be impressed. They made a spectacle of moving over 3 by masquerading as a form of protest activism, focusing on the waste produced by Grand Cross, parading about with clipboards. This, of course, meant that the general populace was keen on avoiding them, despite the spectacle. Deterring attention by drawing it. Cato was disguised as best as possible. Apatia almost drew too much attention. Step 2. Leverage what you can control. Ideally, find ways to pit your problems against one another. There's someone blundering around as the Revenant and striking out beyond Bacon's purview, putting years' worth of work at risk. So I figured I'd get their attention and maybe sick them on the IMX drones, using Ing's data to verify that the drones were illicitly surveilling and data collecting on civilians. I also had the still-missing kid help me locate the drones. Someone pretending to bring justice to those that claimed to enforce it couldn't resist that bait. Once I lured them in with that veritable carrot on a stick, I could observe them and decide my next move against them or with them, all while taking some heat off the frontispiece. I don't believe in coincidences, so I half expected the whole thing to be some sophisticated effort to coax me out of hiding, in which case I had the stun gun and could easily put them in cuffs, turn them in, and regain some brownie points and invisibility with Tupper. Alternatively, this reckless revenant was just some idiot glomming onto the whole vigilante justice thing, riding the coattails of a boogeyman that was, in fact, never a man at all. The first attacks against two drones didn't match the profile of my target, so staked out the final drone right outside the frontispiece. I watched a woman watch the IMX drone. Then, right on schedule, she activated her holographic projection armor in a discount version of the real deal, a male face in the style of a Greek statue weeping tears of gold. I activated my own armor and waited for her to notice me, gesturing for her to meet me when that all-too-familiar mask met my gaze. We met in a nearby alley, and I figured out which category she belonged to. Only an idiot would consider themselves a fan of mine. I'm not pursuing any grand idea of justice or fighting for a larger cause. I just want revenge.
That, for instance, is a really good transition back into the action here, as basically a peek into Cal's kind of internal monologue as we rejoin that conversation in progress. We re-enter it, the attacker of the drone disguised as Revenant, being, you know, sort of enticed to conversation with Cal in this alleyway and having asked, said, "That depends. Are you Revenant?" Cal had answered in the affirmative, and we had just heard the imposter pause for a moment and then say, "Oh, I'm your biggest fan." And that's where we pick up. What is Cal's response to this response?
"And you've got my attention."
Well, I didn't figure I'd ever get it. But no, I just... kind of an inspiration. I mean, everybody knows security and policing on this station is totally fucked. And, you know, here was somebody doing something about it. I mean, to the point where, you know, you had security forces making up wild stories to comfort themselves about getting bagged by you. I mean, great work. I imagine, you know, if there were 5, 10, 20 people doing what you do on station. Anyway, sorry, I'm gushing a little bit. It's not like me. This, of course, all behind the holographic projection armor, which is not very expressive. So, you know, a little uncanny there.
Well, if you got my attention, odds are that others might also be paying attention.
That chuckle is from her. She says, "Well, you know, I've had some attention before for a while. In fact, you know, so much so that my mouth doesn't quite close on one side anymore. So, nothing new for me. But I mean, hopefully it hasn't been getting in your way. I figured, Revenant only showed up every once in a while, so it seemed like it wouldn't be too disruptive for you. But here you are. What can I do for you?"
"Well, I'm thinking I'm going to let you in."
This is not a person who makes a noise that could be described as a squee, but she does make sort of a roughly equivalent noise from behind the holographic projection armor. There's like a little bit of a... aborted arm gesture followed by a more
adorable
and then a throat clearing. "Well, that sounds great. What's involved?"
"I will share targets with you if you promise to stay on mission with me."
Slightly slower nod, goes, "Sure, yeah. I guess from that you've got some irons to the fire? kind of a hopeful note in her voice.
I shove my hands in my pockets and kind of straighten up as though to convey, without the help of facial expressions, a self-assurance. You could say that.
All right. Well, I guess if we're going to be smart about it, we should probably clear out soon before anybody comes to investigate. And she sort of gestures back outside of the alley at the drone. But if you've got a way to keep in touch, I'll be on call.
I'll give her a burner email I have set up for my stuff on Bacon. Mm-hmm. And lay low for a little while.
He goes, yeah, sure. Sure, can do. Probably a good idea. I guess I don't know what the protocol is here. Do we, like, introduce ourselves, or are we just, like, calling each other Revenant?
I'll call you Hunter.
All right, Revenant. And she gives you a little sort of, like, mock salute, and then goes, this rocks. Well, see you around. And sort of hustles out of the alley, holographic projection armor still on, and disappears around a corner, off to the right from the mouth of the alley.
I head in a opposite direction, take a few extra twists and turns through the back road before deactivating my own holographic projection armor and taking off my outer layer to further alter my appearance. And at that point, once I'm sure I'm not being tailed, I make my way to the rendezvous location.
Excellent. So this is a good time also to jump over and say that, you know, Burn, you and the mysterious other hacker are still watching this area around the frontispiece. You see the two Revenants go into this unsurveilled portion of this alley. And then one comes out and turns right, disappears, and then another one comes out and turns left. And
I do my best to track both by camera.
You are more able to follow the one that turns out to be Cal, because Cal is staying in Selvin District and heading toward the rendezvous after considerable sort of tail evasion. The other exits Selvin District and thus gets further from cameras that you have already suborned.
Okay. Having seen the little one number of Revenants enter an alley, a different number of Revenants leave the alley, shenanigans play out, I will just ping the unknown number with the unknown number of... So, did I propose that you set yourself up to be tased by yourself?
I send a response. I don't recognize this number.
I see.
I smile and wave at a nearby
what
camera.
What the fuck?
The unknown other hacker uses the shared substrate of the camera's network systems to send you a message via text, more conventionally than finagling an image insert, as we were doing last time. To Burn says, are you working with a Revenant too?
I think I will respond to that with, apparently.
they respond with, lol, sweet.
It's followed up shortly with, I know this is unconventional and no pressure, but exchange and then parentheses disposable contact information? Question mark.
I will just drop the I will just respond with my VR appearance. That is to say, a match bursting into flame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Make of that what you will.
They respond immediately with LOLOLOLOLOLOL, and then send back a picture of a calico cat.
Huh.
Getting into places you shouldn't be.
Always.
Brilliant.
Anyway, this is still a response from what turns out to be Allie. Says, anyway, Reaper spelled with an R3 out. A little salute emojicon.
Oh, I love it.
Yep.
And then accordingly, you see that the network traffic to that port is discontinued.
I'm not very surprised by this, given the communication by interstitial.
Mm-hmm. If there is anything else that you wanted particularly for you to be accomplishing in roughly the time it takes for Cal to make their way to the basement entrance for this operation, now would be the time to let me know.
No, although I do ping Cal to state that apparently yours is an organization of many.
Tell me what you know.
Inasmuch as that was a question, you can infer the rest.
New asset to me. Needs a tight leash.
Why all this?
I send the smiley devil face emoji.
You get no further response.
That's fair.
Kato, you were the first to arrive at the basement entrance of Selection. Are you spending your time waiting there doing anything in particular, or just attempting to look as inconspicuous as possible in your oversized coat?
I'm attempting to look as inconspicuous as possible, but also knowing that that's impossible, I'm moving around a bit and seeing if anyone else, if I was followed, if anyone seems to be hovering around, establishing how conspicuous I was, since it was probably not zero.
Okay. Let's get, just for purposes of abstraction here, a roll from you. I mean, it's going to be a cool roll. I will let you do it with Criminal Underworld, since that's the sort of thing where you kind of have to be subtle.
Seems reasonable.
So that'll be a +3.
Cool. So that's 7 + 3 = 10.
Okay.
Let the record show this is the first time I rolled a 6 when that 6 was a Dice Punks logo. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah.
It was a 6 and a 1.
Yeah, festivities. Yeah, you know, sort of establish a small radius around the area and rove a bit casually, and I mean, everything seems fine. It seems like it's fine. It seems fine.
Sure. Okay, seems fine.
Meanwhile, Ing, Apatia takes your little parade a little bit past your turn, given the added attention that the heckler brought last time. And goes, you know, kind of to circle back around. In the meantime, you continue to lightly surveil Bronwy running interference on the heckler via your drones, and discover that she is attempting to be as blinkered as possible while pitching him on a religious philosophy centered around the idea that Satan's banishment to hell was an injustice that has broken the intended moral order of the universe, and that we must free him before things will progress as they were always meant to for our species.
Hell yeah.
He is,
I love this,
not seems not to be able to decide if this is a like prank that he should be mad about someone pulling on him, or a serious attempt to convert him to a religion that he should be potentially homicidally angry about. You know, he seems to be sort of stuck in limbo between those two things. And the third thing, of course, being his desire to try and surveil Apatia, which, given distraction and crowds, has fortunately slipped to third slot in this priority list. Gorister continues to tail your cargo bike parade at a distance with some of your other drones attending him. So, I think that it'll be Cato roving, sees the little protest parade nearing their destination, and then kind of goes to rove in the other direction and will sort of run almost physically into Cal showing up around a corner.
I play it off with a moderate amount of grace. Extremely moderate.
I look at you over my nose in a way that tells you it completely was not pulled off.
I do not look abashed, but I do receive the message. All right, so far so good.
Drones are all taken care of. Some of the heat should be taken off of Frenna's piece. And the kid seems like they're all right.
That's good. That's really good. All right. It'd be excellent if I could just switch over to being mad at them rather than worried about them. But there's room for both currently. I contain multitudes.
They're probably still mad at me, but that doesn't change much.
I don't think they're mad at you so much as worried that you're secretly resentful about the whole zapping thing.
I glance pointedly up at a camera where I think one might be, and then back at Cato.
A light blinks.
And give a very meaningful look.
I just let it hang there.
Well, they have more information about that now, at least.
Good.
So, as this conversation proceeds, Apatia and Ing sort of hustle into the alleyway near the basement entrance. And everyone present, including, I should say everyone present, and also burned through the co-opted surveillance equipment, will hear something that typically causes anyone up to anything to feel quite a bit of trepidation. Station police have an infrequently deployed, what would you call it? Riot suppression device, I suppose. The technical term, technical terminology, technical nomenclature, that's what I was looking for, is the Ogermach UWA-7 spider tank. It is quite large. It's piloted by an AI using wheeled legs, and so somewhat resembles a spider. It doesn't get deployed very often, and usually by sort of special division station security. It is better known by most on the station by the name Kumiko, because this is what you hear, is a very cutesy feminine voice that it is announcing, maybe a block over, IMX has partnered with station security to clear the streets due to violence against their equipment. Please return to your homes or workplaces until this crisis is passed. Please comply politely. And then repeats the message. It is getting closer.
I reactivate my holographic projection armor to look like a terabyte boy.
All right. That does take you one prep this time, since last time was the first use in the mission. Any other particular actions from our party?
Just trying to figure out which prep I should remove from. I have two prep of my own. How are we doing on party prep?
Use the group prep.
I think we are currently at 9 or 10. Anybody back me up on that? You've used one.
Had we used, I think. We used one, then we were at 9. If you used one, we're at 8. So we still have plenty.
Yep. Excellent. I will do that.
And I will keep better track of that.
I mean, you seem to be keeping excellent track as it is. So.
I will do better than excellent.
Don't push yourself on this, dude. It's a game.
No, he will push reality on this.
This is not Unknown Armies.
Yet. So, actions from others in our party, given that we currently have a fairly precarious situation here.
How close to the entrance are we? Can we double time it and hope to be off the streets?
You're like right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you're already off the street. You can go down. You're in an alleyway, but.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is going to
start
be...
opening things up then. Yeah.
All right. A couple of roles then. I guess a good place to start would be Kato with a quick plus cybernetics for 2d6 plus 6.
Okay. Good thing I have that plus 6. 3 plus 6 is 9.
Okay. So you begin, you know, sort of hauling the cover out of the way here. It's not enough, of course, just to like lift the hatch and duck in like most people using this would. You have to clear the aperture so that you can hope to get over three through it. You know, in your hurry, the thing that becomes more difficult is to do so with the whole restraints and Faraday cage assembly totally intact. To that end. I think that we'll get rolls from Cal and Ing next. Cal, I think that your role is going to be, call it a quick plus. I guess it probably would make sense for you to be doing physical stuff quickly to be your bounty hunter specialty. So it'll be plus 5, 2d6 plus 5 for your roll. Ing, let's see. I think for you it's probably just going to be a straight quick roll. So 2d6 plus 2, unless you can think of something that would be pretty appropriate.
I think that my quick is 1, So 2d6 plus 1, unless I'm misunderstanding.
You are correct. That is just very difficult to read on my screen that I have it on. The contrast is not very good. Okay. So, yes, you are correct.
There we go. Total of 4.
Okay. And I should make a little roll for Apatia here. Let's see. All right. So, between those present, you manage to hustle the garbage-covered Over 3 assembly into this basement entrance. It is not terribly gentle, because the time pressure is very real. You can hear Kumiko's very sort of cutesy voice coming closer. It is, I guess, probably clear to Cal. Don't, I guess, know if Kato or Ing would have particular experience with this model of urban warfare tank, but that Kumiko probably would not be able to fit bodily into this alleyway. That said, it is not exactly a secret that Kumiko is fully capable of making her own entrances when necessary, using smoke grenades, and it is at least the case that the Earthside actual military applications of this robo-tank have a couple of pretty gnarly automatic weapons that are retractable, and so would not necessarily be obvious to a casual observer. So it does not probably need to be able to fit into the alleyway to come after you exactly.
Hey, Adam, question.
Mm-hmm. Answer.
Would it be possible for there to be, 3 to 4 revenant sightings in places where there definitely are not revenants?
That is a very good question. Sounds like hacking and ghosting rolls are in order.
Here are some dice. So that is 12 for the hacking. Mm-hmm. And 19 for the ghosting.
All right.
Holy cow.
And so, ghosts for his throne.
So yeah, you use some of the footage that you've got of the extant revenants to sort of spoof a couple in the vicinity. And, you know, well, it's working its way through the system at any rate. And hopefully will be effective at drawing off Kumiko shortly.
Excellent.
In the meantime,
none of the sightings are near any of the businesses that I actually like.
Sure, yeah. So the outcome for those in the alleyway is that Over 3 gets hustled through the entrance to the basements, but kind of takes a rough and ready path with some nice loud bong clangs and such. And is at the bottom before any of you are able to enter. Apatia sort of seems kind of conflicted, looking at the cargo bike and then looking at the entrance to the basement, and then firing off a quick message in the group chat, instructing Gorister to take the bike back and hustling through the entrance to the basement. So, on balance, Kato, Cal, Ing, and Apatia all make it into the basement through this entrance right then. Bronwy is still trying to, you know, gum up the works for the heckler. Gorister, bringing up the rear, was kind of hanging out outside the alleyway and immediately turned around and looked busy on his phone when he heard Kumiko's voice. And now we'll be trying to get the bike out of there before it, you know, comes into contact with a 3-ton urban warfare tank. burn. You are no longer able to surveil the party via cameras, but you certainly can surveil the bike and the spider tank.
Yes. However, can I have been en route?
That was going to be what I was asking. And yes, the short answer, you can have been en route. So after over three, Cal goes in first. Everyone else follows. This is a section of basement that was, like many of them, probably intended to be converted after construction. This was an area where builders staged materials for the construction of the station that didn't then get converted, like a lot of basement areas didn't. You know, once people started living on Grand Cross and, you know, things like politics and capitalism and profit motive got involved, systematically accounting for the basement substrate became a pretty pretty low priority. There are some signs of use or even habitation, but none of them are very recent. Piles of discarded refuse, some abandoned belongings, worn cardboard, things like that. There are visible, in some places, small light fixtures. None of them seem to work. So you are providing your own illumination at the moment here. And currently, the thing of most interest that it shows is the messy pile of fake garbage and wire mesh and robot that is Over 3 and the disabled Kitbash. The room does open on either side through person navigable but still sort of cramped passageways to elsewhere in the basements. And about the time you all are collecting your bearings and all whatnot, some not terribly heavy and only somewhat rapid footfalls sort of come from one of the passageways, seeming pretty close, as they are not all that loud. This would be the sound of Burn approaching. Yep.
I would say that I am sneaking like hell.
And I am going to say that there are no other noises in the basement. If nobody's talking, you cannot possibly be totally silent.
I
if they're me, talking, I guess. Then sure.
I Robin? Would, hearing the sound of footsteps that were not entirely expected, casually rest my hand on my gun.
So if nothing else happens, then those footsteps, crescendo a little bit to the point where, in the lights that you are able to provide yourselves, you see the extremely cautious relatively sort of low-key, stealthy entrance of Burn into this basement chamber.
You would see first a hand mirror coming around whatever corner or door or what have you.
Who's there?
Yeah, to me in particular, yeah, that might be as good as seeing Burn. For me.
I think you may have a memory of that sort of thing from the very beginning, but nothing recent.
I still shout, "Who's there?"
I say, your augvert goes off.
I relax immediately. And if anyone is giving me an especially close look, they will see me visibly try not to smile.
And so the gang is reunited. Apatia is off to one side, kind of staring down one of the passages. It is, I suppose, up to each player how much, if any, time your characters have spent in the station basements. I think we know that it is not Burn's first time down here. But we also know that it's not Apatia's first time down here. and she's just kind of staring into space. If it is anybody's first time down here, and or if you are one of our listeners who has never physically been to an O'Neill Cylinder Space Station City's basements, they are kind of disappointingly routine in a lot of ways. If you have, you know, sort of seen the infrastructure that exists underneath a modern city or in a subway station or something, you have some idea of the kinds of things that are present. A big difference, I suppose, would be that the station basements, for all that they are extensive, very few of the areas are huge. This room is maybe larger than an average classroom, but not by much. And there's less of like concrete and masonry than there is just like metal panels, plastic panels. And there's maybe a little bit more infrastructure. It is not totally dark. Many of these little lines for power cables or water and sewer pipes or whatever the hell else those things are on the walls and ceilings for that matter, you know, have little indicator lights or reflective bits or both. And as I mentioned before, there are sort of very basic functional light fixtures, but they seem to have been disconnected, or the bulbs are no longer good. They're just not activated. There's no like light switch or anything. In this particular area, the floor is fairly clear, except for the sort of people having left things around who have been down here since the station's construction. Otherwise, bare floor. One of you at least will know that this is not always the case. There are places where there's just kind of detritus of indeterminate origin, and a couple of places where concerningly there is signs of either active like destruction or dismantling, or bits and pieces kind of like falling to ruin. I guess this is as good a time as I need to note that this mission is halfway done. You got the Dreamer into the basement. Now, it's a matter of moving it where you want it and doing whatever you're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, partially due to Burn's efforts in prep and in general, while signal is not as strong and bandwidth is not as high, you don't lose any sort of connectivity moving through at least the basements in the vicinity of Selden District. And so you can get periodic updates like from Bromley saying that she hopes that you're successful, because she wasn't able to hold on to that guy anymore. He stormed off after visibly restraining himself from punching her. This with a laugh emoji. no word just yet from Gorister.
Oh, every reason to believe we're mostly safe and we're here. Some reason to believe that we should probably get started if we're going to do this.
How deeply into the tunnels are we, or the basements, I should say?
At the bottom of the ladder leading up to the street.
Not very.
I'd suggest maybe going a bit deeper, just safety.
Yeah, not I ours, don't want to wake obviously. This thing up where it can get easily out into the streets.
Yeah, makes sense.
I'd like to leave my drones in a daisy chain behind us, just kind of branching out into tunnels as necessary, doing my best to monitor whether we're being followed.
Sounds good. So I guess two questions of practical considerations come to my mind. First, do we have a destination in mind? And second, how are we moving over three?
Kato's big arm.
Sure.
Yeah. That works.
Dez?
As to a destination, it's possible I know a place, ?
Sure. Let me see if there's a good, what's the word I'm looking for? A good way to invoke chance here. Why don't we just have you roll a clever, which would be plus three, except that you also have basement dweller, which gives you plus one to rolls related to basement activities, so it'll be plus four, 2d6 plus four.
That is double fours, so 12.
And a critical. So, it's not known to the rest of the party because of the nature of communication with you during the prep for this mission, but you actually have a spot picked out as essentially the best local place to do this. It will involve leading them through the exit from this room opposite the one that you came in from, for a ways, down a couple of levels, and then just slightly outside of Selden District. You think it's actually adjacent to one of the window plates, though you're not 100% sure. And what happens there, however, is a relatively long gallery. It's not particularly wide, but it's easier to get distance between two things there. And you're pretty confident that it's both deep enough and far flung enough that it won't be easy to detect anything going on down there from street level, much less above it.
I take us there without explaining any of that.
Sure. The downside, of course, is that it's not super close. We're not talking about like a mountain trail length here, but for carrying over three along with you, it is further than the person carrying over three or people carrying over three would probably want to make it. Which brings me to Kato. And Kato's tough plus cybernetics roll for 2d6 plus 4.
Sure. That's a 9 plus 4 is 13.
Okay. You certainly have the others to assist you whenever necessary, but for the most part, using your heavy lifting frame, you are able to finagle this unwieldy bundle. Though a walk in the park, this ain't.
In my head, it becomes a bride carry, which feels weird.
So, we can abstract and don't need to do it in real time if we don't want to, the conversation that leads to Burn leading everybody to this location without explanation of its merits. But as you are going to proceed, it is easy to notice that Apatia's not moving to follow. In fact, she doesn't seem to have moved much since stopping to stare in the direction that you will now be proceeding.
Any signs of her previous malfunction that's kind of the equivalent of lack of sleep for cybernetics?
That can be one cause of it, and it could be. You sort of look closely at her face, and it seems like, kind of hard to see in the gloom, but it seems like her eyes may be at different focal lengths, her augmented eyes, which would be one sign. Yeah. She does not respond immediately to just, kind of trying to get her attention, so that's another sign that might point to this particular kind of fugue and or maybe seizure-like state. It's not clear.
Apatia, are you alright? No response?
No response. Her eyes don't even change focal depth.
I wait for a minute. And if the others haven't noticed, then I flag them down.
Up to the others, I suppose. Either way, everybody's aware of what's going on with the patient now.
I have a first aid kit. Don't know if it's any help.
Smelling salts.
Probably not in this first aid kit, if I had to guess. Probably this one focuses more on gauze.
To be clear, that is out of character.
Fair enough, but either way, first aid kit would include bandages, gauze, medical tape, disinfectant, tourniquet, probably like an emergency blanket, but nothing so sophisticated as like one of those portable AEDs or anything. Maybe a pen light, if it's fancy.
I ask her, are you okay over there?
exerting while doing so, of course.
Mm-hmm. No particular response.
Has anyone touched her yet?
Not to my knowledge.
Nope.
I'm going to gently rest a hand on her shoulder and give her a little shake.
Now, this is usually one of those sort of like cheap trick things that GMs do, but seeing as you have different levels of organic material in different hands, mm-hmm. which hand are you using?
Oh, this is fun. So I'm pretty sure both of my hands have some degree of alteration. Namely my knuckles. So I would naturally reach for her with my dominant hand, which does have augments.
Okay. I guess a good question for me to ask here that I don't have committed to memory. Which arm is your augvert in specifically?
Lovely.
Sorry.
I'm pretty sure that it is my dominant hand, which is my right okay. side, because my left okay. shoulder is listed as a medical augment.
Mm-hmm. All right. So yes, you reach out with your dominant hand and sort of gently place a hand on, if I remember correctly, at her shoulder, mm-hmm. and she immediately whips around, seemingly purely reflex. So give me, oh, actually, wait, no, that's not a roll for you. That's a roll for Apatia.
Comforting.
Should it be?
No. I was heavily sarcastic.
Yeah. Amusingly, this is the first attack roll of this mission. And she does manage to connect, though it does not do any damage except to the functionality of your augvert. She whips around, and before you can withdraw your hand, buries her chrome canines in the machinery of your augvert. About half a second after that, as you're sort of like jerking your hand, your arm back, kind of catching in her mouth, and everybody sort of reacting, suddenly her eyes focus on you, and she goes to stand up straight, but still has her mouth clamped around your arm, and so like tugs on you, and then like kind of shakes her head enough to get your arm free, and backs up to a wall, and kind of stands there looking at you wide-eyed, hyperventilating a little bit. She doesn't immediately say anything.
Hey, you're okay. You're here.
What? Are you... Did I... Are you okay?
I think so. Not the first time I've been bitten.
She does sort of blink, and this seems to help center her a little bit. She goes, oh, I'm good. Sorry. I mean, that's good. I'm sorry. Oh, I haven't been in the basements in quite some time. Okay. She just, like, takes some deep breaths in through her nose and out through her mouth.
We need you focused in. I know it can be a lot, mm-hmm. but are you going to be okay?
She starts to nod, stops herself, closes her eyes, and then after a moment goes, yes, I will be okay. I didn't expect it to hit me like this, but I'm here now. And then focuses back on Cal and goes, I'm glad you're not hurt, but when this is all said and done, I feel like I owe you a drink if you want one. And she opens her mouth, getting out the word, usually I, and then closes and goes, no, wait, not the time. and then sort of shakes it off and goes, all right, sorry, yes, ready to go now. Let's... And then her eyes kind of drift over Overthrea, and she goes, let's see what happens.
Yeah. I don't drink. But maybe you don't owe me anything, kid. Don't worry about it.
Right. Well, sure.
You get a text that says, at least go for coffee.
I stare at Bern with the confused...
No change in expression.
Look. I look perplexed, and then I look back at Apatia. If you think it might get overwhelming again, no one will fault you for having to take a step back.
Not a bit.
Sure. Yes, thanks. Hopefully not, but that helps. She nods as though to herself and then squares her shoulders and lines up, to proceed. I've held this up long enough.
With that being established real quick, Cal, are you bleeding a lot?
I don't think you're bleeding at all. You
okay.
Yeah. Apatia got your Augvert, so
I take a closer look and say, just bleeding.
Apatia broke my toy.
Just bleeding content then. That's not too bad.
I rotate my arm like someone kind of assessing how their shoulder feels. I think I'm fine. Just was not expecting. That was a surprise.
Yeah, sure.
The patient chuckles awkwardly and goes, to all of us.
Okay, our surprise quota has been hit.
I heft over three and try to get this show back on the road.
Yeah, and you all are following Bern. The basements and their sublevels are dim, surprisingly vacant to anyone who does not know that Bern was sort of kind of trying to forewarn people who might have been down here. Quiet in that way where the sounds that there are quite loud and echo a lot. And cramped, particularly for Cato, who is already sort of a large frame and is also carrying this, relatively heavy and unwieldy thing. It does take probably, given that the basements are not set up for traffic flow, a decent interval, let's call it half an hour, to get where Bern is leading you. Let me make a little roll really quick. So it does take around about a half an hour, give or take, to do this journey. What, if anything, are we attempting to accomplish during that time?
I think I'm going to scoot to the head of the line. I'll try to make it look casual, like I am surveilling the surroundings. But I'll end up next to Bern.
Okay.
Glad you decided to show up.
I had some things that needed taken care of.
Cato was worried about you.
I'm sorry that that's the case. I didn't mean to cause worry. Well, strictly speaking, I didn't expect to cause worry.
Maybe you should give a code word or something.
I'll consider that.
I shove my hands in my pockets and walk in stride for a while, letting the silence stretch out.
I'm watching the two of them very carefully. I assume I can't hear what they're saying, but as I heft over three, I am humming the melody to "Don't Talk to Cops, Kid."
You realize that now you're going to have to make like a recording of this that we release as a song.
Mm-hmm. It's going to have brushed drums and it's going to be very jazzy. It's going to be good.
I love it.
I cannot wait
Looking
for this.
Looking forward to it.
I love this.
You, Kato, can hear some individual words, but without making it obvious that you're listening, you can't get much more specific than that.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything in particular that you came up here to address? I leave a sort of ellipsis where the word officer would go.
I was just checking in.
I see.
Thought you might have questions.
Ah. Plenty, although I don't suppose I'll get answers, or at least not good ones. Which, fair, reciprocal, etc.
Ask the right questions, kid.
Why?
We haven't found out yet.
Seems like no.
I mean, if you're asking me, nothing specific, though, what guesses you might have.
Maybe try something else.
How do you reconcile the sides of yourself?
I don't.
How long then do you figure you have before you fly apart?
Not long.
Do you have an estimation on the blast radius?
It won't affect you.
Will it affect anyone I care about?
I'm seeing to it that it doesn't.
Expand your definition.
Everyone here will be safe.
I will turn and look at you and just raise an eyebrow. Everyone?
Well, everyone behind us and to my side.
Expand your assumptions on who I care about.
I don't know what to tell you.
I apparently don't know what to ask.
In the spirit of transparency.
But you have to understand that flying apart will fuck things up for several people around here.
I'll do my best not to.
Not to fuck things up or not to fly apart?
I can promise you one or the other. And I don't make promises.
Then don't fly apart. I don't need a promise. We both know how much promises are worth.
Hardly anything.
Just don't.
In the spirit of transparency, I didn't know about the others.
Interesting.
I knew about the copycat, but wasn't expecting it to become a whole movement.
This comes back again to the question you won't answer, so I won't ask it again. But given that you're unexpectedly populating a movement, consider motive. Because if you're populating a movement, then you're giving people motive.
And I haven't decided if I'm comfortable with that yet.
It may be too late for you.
What do you advise?
Figure out why someone other than you, someone other than me, might opt into what you're doing.
That's easy, isn't it? They hate what I am as much
as me. Just, you know, consult the thing in your head.
It's more responsibility than I asked for.
Yeah, well, living's like that. None of us asked to be born. None of us asked to be handed our circumstances. None of us asked to be situated in the systems and politics we inhabit here. But here we fucking are.
Here we are. And for what it's worth, it wasn't just Cato that was worried.
Sorry to have worried you. Again, it didn't really occur.
I don't suppose I made it something that would occur.
I mean, there's that too, but I'm sure you can extrapolate.
If there's anything I can do, you know, my resources better than the rest of them.
I think there may be a chat on that in the future.
Fair enough. I suspect you know how to reach me on multiple fronts now.
I just grin at that.
If indeed the two of you lapse into silence, it will probably last until everybody arrives. Unless, of course, the rest of our party are having conversations, in which case you can signal me that that's the case. But assuming small talk or silence. At length.
I'm just keeping an eye and making sure no one else is visibly falling apart.
Mm-hmm. At length, you all arrive at the destination that Byrne had picked out. While Byrne did not say anything in particular about their reasons for picking this particular venue. A lot of their thought process probably becomes apparent upon arrival. It is as close to an ideal location for what you have planned as you are likely to find in a walkable while carrying over three distance from where you started out.
Right. I will retract my daisy chain of drones, assuming that we're about ready to, or approaching the time that we're going to try to wake up the over three.
Yeah. Seems likely. Yep.
Still useful to know if we're followed, but, you know, at this point, we need the drones on point.
Yeah. Well, it would seem that most of where you've been heading has not been usable spaces for people. And, of course, also Burn put out the word that, hey, maybe clear out of this part of the basement this day because things might be going down. Which isn't to say there aren't signs of recent occupancy in a couple of places. But this is, I guess, kind of illustrated by the area that you arrive in, which has some signs of having been used as, at the very least, a place to like crash. But no one is present currently. There are makeshift resting places, a couple of lean-tos, things like that. But most things of any particular significance personally or value are all gone. All that's left is the cardboard, the pallets, the foam padding, things like that, tarps. So that means that we are maybe, possibly, finally going to use a little bit of the mechanics that I've been trying to incorporate, but not when we are doing stuff, right? That is to say that there is an arena with some tags here. So.
Not at all foreboding.
Well, you never know. Could go any number of
ways.
We
did kind of sign up for a boss fight.
Yeah, here. We did.
Just suddenly you hear music, like a few, to quote Noah Caldwell Gervais, Latin choirs are talking over each other on a conference call. No, you actually arrive in an almost entirely unlit and quite quiet, fairly long, if not overly wide, gallery of sorts in the basements. And as far as you have a destination, this is it. What are we attempting to do to accomplish the latter half of this mission?
Well, I'm putting over three down gently, that's for sure. I assume no stirrings have occurred while in transit.
Nope.
I check in with our language team. Let's have a reminder of whether there's really anything that we need to set up before trying to wake up over three.
Apatia, who has been entirely silent this entire walk, speaks up and says, well, we've got a few things to try, but it's all pretty much verbal or accomplishable with, and she gestures toward Kato, some of our onboard equipment, so nothing in particular needs to be set up, I don't think. So, I mean, I would love to be able to establish communication with one of the dreamers. I am trying to restrain my expectations, because, well, people have tried before.
Yeah. Understood.
Cal?
As this conversation is unfolding, her words are punctuated by the sound of me checking my magazine and checking my gun loudly.
I think I've done everything I can to know about people who've tried before, what maybe almost worked, what didn't. So hopefully we don't have to speak that language, gesturing at Cal.
And for what it's worth, the scattered information that you have been able to hunt up gives you a few things to try, but no reason to believe that any of it will work, just that any of it might work.
All right.
What is coincidence and what is response is hard to parse from as few reports as you have to work with.
Knowing a patient won't like it, I make sure the other gun is also ready.
If it gets bad, get out. I'll provide cover.
I think we've talked about this whole heroic sacrifice thing. We're all getting out.
Yeah, that doesn't stop me from providing cover.
I will be pointing at Cato when this is said.
I avoid eye contact.
All right. Just keep the weapons out of sight. You know, just the mere presence of a gun sometimes could escalate a situation. I'd suggest that as soon as we manage to activate it, we back off to a reasonable distance and the only intrusions, if there are any, communication attempts. I don't object to there being a backup. Yeah.
Round one doesn't involve guns, visually or otherwise. Agreed.
I should probably, change my projection armor.
Not a bad idea.
And probably the ideal, backup plan is just to follow it safely at a distance and see what happens next. Plan F might be violence.
I reach out and squeeze Ing's shoulder.
Ing nods.
It is unyielding.
I figured.
What are you actually doing to try to wake up Over 3?
Well, we've done a fair bit of research, so I mean, I'll spend one prep to say one of the things that we've researched is how to wake up a dreamer in a non-lethal fashion. We at least probably have a sense of what people have tried that they claim did not result in instant distraction.
Sure. Well, I guess first deduct that prep from either your personal or the group's prep. And
I'll call that one personal, because this was me doing this digging.
Mm-hmm. Your sort of online research forms a substrate. It is hopelessly noisy, since the majority of people talking about these things don't seem to believe they actually exist and just treat them like Slender Man. But, you know, you tried to find the patterns where you could, and of course, the first thing you've got to do is take off the Faraday cage. So, you take off the Faraday cage. Next up, you are aware that some people claim to use hardware interfaces. Fortunately, if Over 3 has some external buttons, switches, slides, touchpads, etc., they are not obvious to you. One thing that was suggested deep into a forum thread is that perhaps the panels that make up its polyhedral surface are actually reversible and thus can sort of show interfacing or not. Currently, none of them are. So, the next recourse is things that people claim to have said in Over 3's presence to either activate or, and these are at the bottom of your list, agitate it. Of course.
Activate without agitate would be ideal, but of course most of what I've been reading is on the level of saying Beetlejuice multiple times.
More or less. And the thing that's at the top of the list is reciting Pi. Third on the list is reciting E. So, that's what you're working with.
I am vastly amused that that is now a canonical strategy for dealing with Over 3.
I mean, yeah, you have a machine that recites Pi. You are not the only person ever to have thought of this. even if maybe you could be the only person to have encountered over three in the metaphorical flesh to have thought of it.
Maybe the only one to have tried it. Yeah.
So I need.
Okay. Well,
go on.
I want to know about your needs, but I was going to say, if there are no objections from the party, then I will begin to recite pie.
Sure. I need from you
do it up.
A straight ahead, just roll a d6 for luck and tell me what you get.
Oh boy. Okay.
Ominous.
I was a 3. Kind of appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the things that some of our listeners may know is that it's very hard to get a computer to be truly random. They are systems governed by mathematical rules. And so just pick a number, any number, is actually kind of hard to get a computer to do straightforwardly. And one of the ways that randomness is simulated in computer systems is sort of generating a seed of some kind and then having it select that digit of pi. And there's your random number or numbers. Just a fun little connection there. So, roll a 3. You begin to recite pi. You do have to start checking digits before any kind of response is elicited. But probably Kato and Ing are, given Android and full body prosthetic, the first to perceive that gradually getting louder from insanely soft over 3 is reciting along with you. Has not moved yet.
I indicate this to the others just by gesture. I point at over 3 and then make a gesture of, this is a seance. Palms and fingers turned upward.
Marvelous.
I do, of course, continue reciting.
My eyes widen, but then I mimic the body language and recite at a slight delay.
At about that point, over 3's recitations get into the audible range for organic ears of your, you know, sort of baseline human. I say this because I have worse hearing than most baseline humans.
I join the chant, softly, gently, trying to synchronize with what I hear over 3 saying in terms of the timing of the digits.
Almost exactly simultaneously with you, Apatia joins in with the effort being exactly as you've described it, except that she is slowly getting louder and doesn't necessarily seem to be aware that she's holding her hands kind of up with her elbows tucked near her waist like she's at a Baptist revival.
I will be spending a personal prep item, I suspect, for this.
Sure.
Because I will be producing a Ouija board that's been translated into ternary.
It's been translated into what?
Instead of binary, it's ternary.
See, I would have only tracked up through trinary, but I understand. Fair enough.
It due to Latin or Greek things, it's ternary rather than trinary.
Interesting. I was assuming, and I'm glad you clarified, because my interpretation would have been that that was 4 rather than 3, abbreviated from tetra. Fascinating. All right, ternary it is. There's now a Ouija board on the scene.
Feel free to correct me.
I trust you implicitly on matters of classical languages.
The ternary code is a real thing. It's not actually used in computer science a whole lot. It's more of a hypothetical. But that just makes it better in this case.
Exactly.
While reciting, I see if I can get Apatia's attention to just kind of make a gesture to, you know, calmly, gently, communicating those things non-verbally as I continue reciting.
I am about to roll for Apatia. She seems oblivious to your presence.
All right.
The seance is going well.
So, the recitation continues, the seance, as it were, continues, and very gradually Overthree's recitation gets louder. I would like, from each of our player characters, a roll. I would like your, let's go with clever, just straight up clever, 2d6 plus your clever.
Ooh.
That's a 6 plus 2 is 8.
I got a pair of 4s plus 3, so 11.
Right. I should note my 6 was a pair of 3s, so it's an 8, but it's a crit.
2 crits?
If that matters.
I have the same result as Robin, pair of 4s plus
9 total
3.
On my side.
Okay. A lot of pairs.
It's a critical juncture.
Mm-hmm. In rapid succession, those who got criticals first, and then Aang, on a delay, and then probably Apatia last of all, if she reacts, period, will hear another sound. At first, it's easy to dismiss as resonance or echo. But as it becomes slightly clearer, you are hearing numerous fairly rapid, maybe footfalls, getting louder.
I look to Aang.
I send my drones.
Okay. So, at this point, Overthree's recitation of Pi is at the volume level of, shall we say, casual conversation in a slightly noisy place. And it has not otherwise moved. It is just still. And for that matter, so is the deactivated Kitbash. It is not reciting Pi. It is not doing anything. It's totally inert. Aang. If I could get from you a clever plus robotics for 2d6 plus 6.
Ooh, bad roll. 3 on the dice plus 6 is 9.
Okay. What your drones discover relatively quickly is that whatever is coming is not using the same set of human scale deliberately constructed tunnels that you all use to get here.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Two things happen almost simultaneously, though it may not be clear to you in the moment that they happen at about the same time. What's much more noticeable to those of you who aren't Aang is that in the middle of reciting a 7 of the digits of Pi, Apatia collapses. Just like her strings have been cut. Aang, your drones fanning out, looking for things. Buddy perceives that hustling through an unusually large ventilation aperture is a machine that looks not too dissimilar from those Boston Dynamics cop bots. By sound captured from Buddy, it's not the only one. This thing is sort of a blue, green, and yellow with some grays and blacks. Its construction is wider at the front and narrower at the rear. It has these singly jointed legs that end in sort of little rubber grips, and it is not quite able to extend them all the way as it hustles through this ventilation passage. Instead of a blank rectangular front, there is a call it 8-inch by 8-inch square cutout in the front that has a cluster of tendrils kind of coming out of it that stay fairly close together until fairly close to their tips, which are dimly red lit. And it's hard to see through Buddy's observations, but there appear to be thicker, less numerous appendages coming off of its back. It hustles past Buddy as Buddy flies as far out of the way as it can. And then another one. And then a third.
All the same construction?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not quite the same markings, but very subtle differences. A triangle or a square, two stripes or three, that kind of thing.
I think that one of us had done some research on other kinds of dreamers, Cal.
That was
correct.
Me.
So presuming that Cal shared this with the group, does this match the description of some of the dreamers?
From Apatia's verbal recounting at the Place of Honor, confirmed by Cal's research, this is what the internet has dubbed a leaper. There are an unknown number of them, but there's definitely more than one. You've seen three. Who knows what the upper limit is?
Okay.
Sorry, what is the title the internet has given
them? Leaper.
Okay. I heard Reaper, so that's a very big...
Indeed. Glad we clarified that.
Me leaping, me sewing.
As opposed to... Bwom.
Right, right.
Assuming direct control.
I'm plenty intimidated by the Leaper.
Yeah, same, same.
I'm not feeling terribly reassured, despite its name connoting a grasshopper-like
creature. Sure. I never said that, but, you know, there's degrees of badness, as we're all intimately aware these days.
On the third one that passes by, you will notice in the data you're getting from Buddy that there is some definitely not coincidental blurring. It seems like when these things are aware that they're being observed, they can distort their images on digital recording media.
I'd like to gesture the group away such that, you know, I continue to recite Pi as I do so, but I wouldn't want to be between the leapers and over three. And I try to ensure that others are also not between, dragging Apatia with me as I go.
Okay.
I move to help with dragging Apatia.
All right. So you're...
I begrudgingly abandon my ternary Ouija board near over three.
Yeah.
And flatten on the non-window side of the gallery.
Okay. So you all draw to that side, leaving the ternary Ouija board on the floor. Over three has still not made any action other than reciting Pi, and it seems to have stalled out at the level of somebody projecting into a microphone that is fixed to a podium or something in a relatively large space. Not overly loud, but definitely not normal conversational volume either. It seems to have plateaued there. Has not moved a limb. Everybody draws away, and then those who are not getting information from a flying drone can, in fact, hear the sort of footfall sounds, a poom, 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 poom kind of noise getting louder as these leapers close in. You have an opportunity to take a preparatory action if you wish to.
I'd like to try to invoke Laughing Kid to appear as a kitbash.
Interesting. Certainly you can do so. I'm going to do a little bit of a roll here to see exactly what the outcome of that is. All right.
In which I mess with forces beyond my comprehension.
Cal?
I have riot gear. Mm-hmm. So I will leave it up to you whether or not I have to spend a prep for having it with me. But
I don't think that you do.
Okay, thank you. I would like to erect the shield covering a patient Ing, and I'm going to toss the gas mask to burn.
Okay. Those are actions that you can take in this interval, for sure. Anyone else?
Not to leave you out, Kato, but I know you have a firearm.
No, you're good. I, you know, and in fact, I square up with the large arm able to act protectively and the shorter arm having a gun in it.
You, you get a nod from me.
I give a look that, that says I'm grateful to know how to use this thing, but embarrassed to be grateful.
If there's no preparation that's needed to prepare the biochaff to be ready, then I would like to just kind of make sure that my drones are in a position to passively record mm-hmm. what's going on with visual and audio sure. for later analysis.
My ruling here is that each use of the biochaff is going to represent a prep, such that, like, basically what you're saying is, like, we prepared each sort of like volley of this earlier, mm-hmm. you know, per prep used. So yes, you have it ready to go.
That works.
And the prep expenditure will be when each use of it takes place.
All right. So all yeah, right. just make sure that, you know, recording for later posterity continues to recite mm-hmm. Pi in sync as closely as possible with Over 3.
All right. After about another 8 digits of these footfalls getting louder, Over 3 falls silent. And then a piece of the ceiling about a second and a half later drops with a loud clang to the floor about 15 feet to the left of and opposite you from Over 3. And 3 of these leapers come pouring out of the aperture in rapid succession. So, because you all were prepared for these leapers to arrive, players will get the first actions of the round and can decide in what order you will act. For your planning purposes, this room in the basements here is affected by the tag bad footing. This is not a entirely like obstructed surface, but it is going to be hard to see what is on the floor near you, and there are plenty of things that could get in the way. On the other hand, cover, at least in terms of line of sight, is relatively available. Not everything that you could hide behind will actually obstruct a melee or ranged attack, but there's plenty that you could hide behind if you wished to. So, actions.
You said the 3 leapers are emerging about 15 feet away from the ceiling. Was that right?
I believe, yes. 15 feet away, sort of on the other side of and to one side of where Over 3 is. And they are cool. Yeah, emerging from the ceiling.
Just making sure I'm picturing it mm-hmm. correctly here.
Yeah. What's their body language as much as it can be determined?
I mean, these are on the design basis of like our contemporary realities cop robots. Mm-hmm. So
murder dogs,
their body language is relatively aggressive, though as they emerge there is a sense that they are getting their bearings. It is a little hard to read. They are quadrupedal with sort of a mostly featureless kind of rectangular oblong body. and tendrils smaller coming out of their face and tendrils larger coming out of their backs. The tendrils in their faces move more or less in unison up to a point. The ones on their backs, all over the place.
I look to Aang.
I know that the rules say that we're in combat, but I would do what I can to withdraw a bit.
Okay.
And wait to activate the biochaff until something makes an overtly aggressive attempt to try to hurt or kill one of us.
Okay. So you move away, and I'm going to roll into some cover so that you'll be less vulnerable to any ranged attacks until your beginning of your next turn. What are the three player characters up to?
I also withdraw with Aang dragging Apacia and
all right,
using the shield accordingly.
Yeah. Further taking cover.
I think I take that cue as well, and I do not, as Frank Reynolds would say, start blasting at this time.
I also take cover.
Okay.
In a terribly original move.
Sure. So our group of player characters, one of them dragging Apacia, falls back and sort of takes what cover is available and watches what happens with our leapers, which specifically is one of them uses the tendrils on its back to grab the Kitbash and at least start to pull over three away from you. The other two sort of lope in the direction of your side of the room, right, that you have retreated to. They are advancing towards you. One thing that becomes relatively clear here is that if these particular dreamers have any ranged attack options, they are concealed. They're not, they don't obviously have a way of attacking you at range from the jump.
Okay.
That brings it back around to you all's actions.
I'll activate the, I believe we discussed having like sensors for packet emissions and so on that might be communicatory on their part.
The EM spectrum sensors. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spend one prep to deploy those.
I will take that out of personal.
All right. No role required. You deploy the sort of broader range EM sensors and begin in short order receiving information from them. The only thing that you can say immediately is that they are definitely transmitting information of some kind between one another. What's interesting is that it is kind of between what you would call like the frequencies used for like Wi-Fi internet and frequencies that are too short range to be useful for human infrastructure. They sort of take this band of frequencies that are usable but not long range enough to be particularly useful for human electronics. And of course, you're logging this data for later analysis.
Oh, yeah.
Other actions.
How close are the leapers already? The two that have approached us, are they right on top of us? Are they just kind of menacing in our direction and approaching?
They will be within arm's reach by the time their turn comes up.
Um, Follow-up question, the biochaff, is that an explosive, obviously threatening gesture, or is it a... I don't want to say peaceful deployment, but is that like firing things at the wall, or is that like a... Vroom. Okay, now these signals are out.
I would say it is on the level of a small firecracker. It uses a combustion reaction to spread the signal emitters out. There will be a loud popping sound, maybe a flash. The actual velocity of the emitters themselves won't be like projectile weapon high, but it will be faster than most people could throw a baseball.
Okay. If it's possible to retreat further, to obviously be withdrawing, retreating from this advance, I'd like to do so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's possible to prep that chaff as an action, if they actually do reach us and attack, to try to distract, I'd like to do both those things. If that's stretching the rules too far, I will just withdraw, take cover.
Yeah, I think you'll have to deploy the biochaff as an action on your turn. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can already have it in your hand. That just doesn't, you know, really have the mechanical effect of anything in particular. You can withdraw.
Mm. Great.
Can we choose the order?
Yeah.
I'll hold up my hand in the universal stop gesture and shout refrains of Canopus.
Okay, so when you do this, Cal, one of the two leapers coming towards you sort of, I guess the verb I would use would be ambles to a halt, but doesn't like stop. It stops advancing towards you, though it is relatively close because there wasn't that much room to cover to begin with. But its tendrils, both face and back versions, kind of quest around a little bit. The other one that is advancing towards you continues. Ing, you are able to back up a little bit more, basically into the wall and duck behind cover closer to it. And you do have the biochaff emitter sort of ready to go in your hand. Burn. Before we flip back over to the other side of this turn, you get a notification. A reminder to our listeners that last session, last episode, when the cameras around the frontispiece cut out as part of the other revenants operations, Burn put the frontispiece on lockdown. You get a notification from the security suite at the frontispiece that the back room door is undergoing an attempt at access. This comes with a security camera still of what is clearly a terabyte boy attempting to interface with the lock. And that's where we'll end our session.
Right on.
That concludes this session of Dice Punks. Thank you for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did, and that you'll join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com, and on Tumblr and Blue Sky as @dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell. Say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening. Take cues from your friends as to when to start blasting, but don't take it off the table if you're being attacked by robot police dogs.
Thank you for listening, everyone. I was going to make a similar joke, but instead I will settle on know when to open up a little bit and reach out for help.
That too.
Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, when you leave home, lock up.
Thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you, watchers, for watching the listeners listen. Listeners, don't worry. The thing you're listening to is not listening to you.
And as the poet once said, gee, it's swell to finally meet your other friends. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for a GPOL campus safety briefing with Officer Armitage. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their work in the link at the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared on the podcast now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only Officer Armitage, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Machevic, Freya Erling's daughter, and Minerva McJenda. You can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland. Links to the system and authors can be found on the Punk Grimoire section of our website, DicePunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, and even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to Dice Peaks after show for episodes 1.1 and following. I'll also throw in that patron-only Discord got to choose what Ing's first meal would be, so you're missing out if you're not part of it. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
Greetings, students. This is Officer Armitage with your weekly GPOL campus safety briefing, brought to you by your friends at Polytech Security Solutions. Grand Cross Polytechnic is deeply committed to upholding the principles of free expression and open dialogue. The right to peaceful protest is a fundamental part of vibrant academic community, and we respect and value your engagement in issues that matter to you. However, we are also firmly dedicated to the safety and well-being of every member of our campus community. Recent developments surrounding planned demonstrations have raised significant concerns about the potential for conflict, including credible threats of... Are you kidding me, Adam?
What? I didn't...
Was this Tupper's idea?
Well, I mean...
Find someone else to read this crock of shit. Do you have something else for me? Literally anything else.
Well, Tupper said, I'll see what I can find.
Okay. This should work. Just use the first portion and I'll continue from there.
Yeah.
It's Cybersecurity Week. From safeguarding personal information to defending university networks, your everyday choices make a difference. Here's how to be the cybersecurity hero GPOL needs. 1. Lock it down. Use strong, unique passwords and turn on multi-factor authentication for extra protection. 2. Think before you click. Watch out for phishing emails and suspicious links. When in doubt, don't click. 3. Guard your gear. Lock your screens when stepping away and avoid using public Wi-Fi for sensitive tasks. Join our cybersecurity awareness workshops or reach out to the IT help desk for tips and guidance. Polytech Security Solutions, serving our future by protecting the present.